I've sort of kept half an eye on Bloods and people yes. that run EQ. And I have, without doubt, seen people with low estrogen on EQ and no other reason for the estrogen to be low. So from that, I have to assume that the EQ has an anti-estrogen effect. But I have also seen people running EQ where their estrogen is elevated.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. All of our programming is brought to you by you, the people of Patreon. Thank you for supporting our shows. We're also brought to you by evalbloodanalysis.com. You can get your lab work done by jolly old Dave if you're in the UK. You can also go to truenutrition.com and use our code ThinkInTheUS to get high-quality, third-party tested supplements. And we can't forget Strom Sports Nutrition for those of you in the UK. Great health and performance supplements over there. Dave, we're back. How's it going?
Okay.
You gotta bring, and it's, I know it's early. Well, it's early here. We're recording, like, this is the first thing I'm doing in the morning, guys. Wake up real early so I can hang out with Dave. You gotta bring the energy, Dave. You gotta, like, we're doing YouTube. You gotta talk with your hands and stuff like that, you know?
Do I have to? sounds like effort.
Yeah, you gotta
it
be like
way too much
really
effort.
Excited, you know? That's what we do.
Yay!
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, like that. All right. Today, guys, we're gonna talk about a bunch of gear. That's what we always do. What? And I have a special favor to ask of Dave later in the episode.
Okay, go.
But I'll get back to that. So if you guys want to take part in the show, then definitely comment below. You guys filled us up with questions for the last one. Just comment on YouTube on the latest episode of the podcast. Well, next time we do the show, we'll get to your questions. That said, Dave, you're going in for a procedure next week. So we're going to have to take a week off, aren't we?
No, I'm going in on Friday. Now we have us like taking a week off.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, there's that. Funny. So, listen, we had somebody ask us, and it's just kind of a vague psycho question. I figured this would be a great place to just jump in. He said, test Primo EQ. Is that good to go? Is it a good cycle? But it's a vague question. You know what I mean? Just overall, is that good to go?
I think the problem with that is potentially going to be over-suppressed estrogen.
So we were gonna dive into EQ at some point, and I know that there's a lot more people talking about potential estrogen suppressive effects. Can you tell us a little bit about what your experience has been with that, or what you've learned, what you've gleaned in recent times in that situation?
So from a science perspective, my understanding, and I haven't had a super, super big look at this, so my understanding is that EQ produces a metabolite that is a very powerful anti-estrogen, but it's only produced in a small amount. So there was a lot of original, when it came forward, probably, I think about 6 months, maybe 12 months ago, that it came forward that EQ may be estrogen suppressive. There was a lot of people that were very mixed on it and whether this metabolite could actually, in the real world, impact estrogen levels.
Yeah, I think it was More Place did a big deep dive on it a while back, a year or so.
Since then, I've sort of kept half an eye on Bloods and people that run EQ. And I have, without doubt, seen people with low estrogen on EQ and no other reason for the estrogen to be low. So from that, I have to assume that the EQ has an anti-estrogen effect. But I have also seen people running EQ where their estrogen is elevated. Now, obviously, there's no testing on whether the compounds that the people are ringing are correct. So I don't know if the elevation ones were EQ or whether it was some testing there. Or vice versa. All I can tell you is that I have seen occasion where EQ has worked as an anti-estrogen. And it's actually, Masteron is a similar one where I've seen master on lower estrogen levels, but I've also seen it only act as a SERM. And where estrogen levels actually be quite high, where you'd expect the person to be suffering with estrogen-related sides, and they're reporting no sides whatsoever. So, yes, does EQ have an anti-estrogenic potential? I would say now, yes. Is it widespread? Doesn't appear to be, but we come back to that, you know, are they genuinely using EQ? I don't know, because obviously there's no testing in any of this. It's only the blood testing levels, or there's no drug testing levels.
Yeah.
But yes, it would appear it could do. So there is the possibility that if you're going to run Primo, which most definitely is anti-estrogenic.
Right.
And EQ, that you may over-suppress estrogen.
I could see that. I think, so I've seen a little bit of this. Now, anymore, though, I've tended to run EQ lower lately, the last several years. And I think part of that might be a lot of the people that I'm using it with are newer guys. Guys that they're not at a point where they're ready to take, you know, multiple gram cycles, right? So if we're doing, say, 600 tests and we added in 300 EQ, I haven't noticed anything with that where I'm going to say like, oh yeah, that's going to smash your estrogen. You know what I mean? But if we were to get that EQ a little bit higher, let's say we did 600 and 600, you know, then I might be a little bit more concerned. So I guess what I'm kind of getting at is I think that the dose is going to be one of the factors that we have to look at here. I know that a lot of guys lately, they've been tending to want to run their test a little bit on that lower side versus 20 years ago. You know, test is best was the main attitude, and start with test and build everything off that. Now I'm seeing guys that are doing like, you know, maybe 300 test, right? In 500, 450 EQ, you know, and then another 300 Primo. So if you had a cycle like that, I'm feeling like, sure, you might get more estrogen suppression. But if you're doing like 600 test, 300 EQ, then I'm not as concerned about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, obviously dose specific, but I was just basing it on all the compounds being the equal dose.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could potentially run into low estrogen issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I'm just trying to take it a step further, because then I'm asking myself, okay, well, how do we apply this in real life? And how could we potentially avoid these things, right? You know, how would we go about avoiding a problem? And I think that that's where we get into the dosing, you know. What do you think would be a dose that might be safer on estrogen, not completely leveling it, say, low dose cycle with those three compounds?
How low?
We're saying, let's say somebody who's maybe done a couple cycles in their lives and they've kept it around, you know, 600 milligrams, 750 total, and they're looking to step it up a little bit in this third cycle.
So I'd do 2 gram a test.
Ah.
Well, you said step it up.
A little. I said step it up a little, Dave. A little.
That is a little. Okay. I'd probably look somewhere around the 400 test to 250 EQ to 250 Prima.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think that'd be a bad thing. I don't think that'd be a bad thing at
all. I think from a point of view of cycle progression, I'd try and keep it a gram or under.
Yeah.
Total. I think that would be enough.
We have somebody in the stream. He says, I run 500 tests, 500 EQ currently with 0.5 ADEX Monday and Thursday, and his E2 is 45.
That's stateside scale, isn't it?
Yeah, so that means it's a little bit on the outer range end, but not much. Like, that's totally acceptable. Heck, if you had a 45, even on TRT, I wouldn't say we needed an AI for that, you know? I'd consider that to be a decent place.
Hmm.
Depending to where his test level, where's your free test at and total test? That'd be my next question to him. How's it going, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably equivalent to about 180 UK. which I would probably have run it a little bit lower, but it would depend on the individual's personal sensitivities to estrogen as well.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, a lot depends on where that's putting his test level as well, because then I'd have a rough idea of how much the AD is affecting it.
Right.
And then could surmise if the EQ was having any impact.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's see what else we have here, because we do have a bunch of them. You guys freaking left us a bunch of questions. By the way, if anybody in the live stream has any questions, we're hanging out just at the Facebook group. We're recording this at the Facebook group. If anybody wants to join, we do a lot of stuff over there, like poke fun at Dave on the group. Oh, he says, let's see. So he tested out at over 1,500. So it doesn't give him, he didn't get an exact reading. He just topped Yeah, he topped it out. All right, let me see what else we have here, though. And by the way, guys, if you're new to our content, we'd love to have you along. So, you know, subscribe, hit the bell. Plus, comments and likes are huge. That stuff helps us a ton. If you're watching the show, if you get any kind of value out of it, then please leave us a comment and definitely hit the like button. Thank you.
So, right. Scott likes, comments and likes, where I prefer cash.
Yeah. All right. He says, hey, folks, I always have low HDL. Can this be genetic related? Whenever I take gear or not, I always am between, wait a second. I've always been between 0.8 to 0.9 nmol. I take 500-750 tests in HCG only cycles. LDL and the rest of the biomarkers are absolutely fine and within range. Based on what Dave said in the last episode, does this mean that I'm going to have heart issues due to low HDL?
Right. So the first thing is, it doesn't mean, it means there is the potential, and there is a very big difference between those two. It is definitely not absolute. It is definitely not definitive. But there is the potential of an increased cardiovascular risk, yes. However, your HDL adulteration is not dramatic either. 0.8, 0.9 is not super, super low, but it is low. Test only would definitely produce that amount of suppression very easily, particularly on doses of 500, 750. It all depends on what HDL support you're running. In order to try and combat that. Sometimes HDL support has to be quite aggressive, and even then, it's not necessarily going to keep on top. I at the UK at the moment, it's all Primo. It's all Primo and Mast. Everybody just wants to run Primo and Mast. I mean, obviously, there's a test base there, but I see low HDL levels on a regular basis, and even with quite substantial support, we're talking, you know, a gram of citrus bergamot, 3-4 grams of krill oil,
yeah,
and various other mechanisms like Pauline therapy, they still can't get their HDL into range. But the thing is, you build up that HDL in between cycles, so you have a buffer, so that when you go on cycle, it inevitably is going to come down, but because you've built a buffer, it doesn't get as low and to the point where it's creating major risk. So, you know, don't start thinking you're going to drop dead in 10 years' time with a heart attack. That is most definitely not the case. And as I did say when I talked about HDL, that the science around it is very disputed.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of argument about how impacting it is on heart or not, as the case may be. I know somebody who springs to mind who has continually had low HDL in every blood test we've ever done for him. And as far as I'm aware, his last set of checks, he came back perfectly fine. Hmm. So there will be people that naturally are lower, in the same way there will be people that are naturally higher. That will occur. And the risk element is debatable. But my old point of view is, I would rather err on the side of caution and try and prevent it, because I'm not having to do anything super, super complex to present it. It's just a bit of supplementation.
Yeah.
And then find out it wasn't needed, rather than not bother and then find out it was.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%. I'm right with you. I can tell you my personal experience was that for a good 8-10 years, while competing and pushing hard, my HDL was 25, okay? Flat out, it was 25 forever. You know, bringing it up to like 40 would be ideal, right? I just assumed, okay, this is just where I'm at, you know, and everything else is looking good. My health is looking, you know, pretty solid overall. That said, coming off cycle, basically long term now, and just running TRT with occasional little spurts here and there, maybe a little injectable D-ball for a few weeks here and there, my HDL is at like 40 now, and it's just holding solid. So I did have, you know, there was a point where I started thinking like, well, is this just genetic? You know, before I ran a lot of gear consistently, I didn't do a lot of labs. You know what I mean? It's like you don't, normal person isn't just walking around doing labs all the time. So I wasn't super aware of what my HDL would have been. All I knew is that while on cycle, on off cycle, cycling on and off for a decade, I was at 25. Come off cycle, now I'm at 40. So I did have that potential, though there was a period of time I just started wondering, hey, maybe I'm just genetically low. No, I wasn't. I just ran a lot of gear.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, but don't be surprised if you can't get it above a certain level while you're on cycle.
Right, yeah. That, no matter what I did, man.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, but just make sure that when you're off, you push it as high as you can.
Yep, yep, I'd agree with that. Okay, we had another one here about, let's see. Okay, yeah. I like this one from Venom123. He says, great show, guys. Scott, you guys touched on this a bit on the show. Was thinking about competing again in the Masters division. Not trying to get a pro card, but do you think just doing my TRT and bringing in some pharma-grade VAR for the last 4 to 6 weeks would suffice for to be a good enough look? I'm really trying to keep on the safe side. I just really am falling in love with the idea of prep again, but not so much the gear.
Now, this guy messaged me actually with this question.
Oh, yeah.
To which I answered. I just said that the inclusion of Anavar would help with muscle preservation, but I don't see it being very particularly dramatic on the look. I don't think he's going to get a huge amount out of it from a prep point of view in the sense of muscle mass, but sure, it would help with preservation of the muscle that he does currently have. And obviously, I don't know where his physique currently is, so I don't know where he is from a point of view of competing and standards. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you enjoy the process of prep, and you which means you are mentally disturbed and unstable and need putting in an asylum, but if you enjoy starving yourself and covering yourself in Marmite and standing on stage in your underpants, then enjoy it. You know, does it matter then what you present as long as you present the best version of you?
Yeah.
And if you stand there knowing that I've done this on just TRT or I've done this on just 40 milligrams of Anavar, you're not going to get any medals for that. Nobody gives a shit. But apart from yourself, and you can take pride in yourself that you got to stage with minimal drug use and you presented the package you presented. It's not going to be comparable to the guy stood next to you who's been hammering a couple of gram in the off season and, you know, a bag load of Trend to get on stage.
Yeah.
It isn't comparable, but that isn't the issue if you're just doing what you enjoy. If you're competing for the pleasure of competing, then that's the bit that's important, not the where I placed and how many drugs he took and how many drugs I took. That becomes inconsequential. It's really just the process that you're enjoying.
Yeah. I've got a few thoughts. I'll share two. First one is that every time that I entered a contest prep, and every, you know, throughout the years, I've worked with a lot of people, helping them do shows. People enter the contest prep with one idea in mind. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to keep it conservative this time. I'm going to keep the test low. We'll just add in that 25 VAR the last 4 weeks. Sometimes as a coach, I've had to step in and say, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Because this isn't what you said, you know, 3 months ago. But people you start getting competitive, and whatever you were thinking about doing, then you want to double that, and then you want to add in 2 other compounds, and then you say, hey, I'm doing all this work, so, you know, let's add in this, this, and this, if it can take me further. So I'd have to say, watch out for that competitive nature, because I think you can get yourself carried away. I know I have, and basically everybody I've worked with, there's some point or another, is there anything else I should be taking, you know? I don't care how much you're taking, what you're taking, is there anything else, you know? We want that edge. So there's that. Second thing is, I mean, cost to benefit, 25 VAR for the last, what do you say, 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, realistically, VAR is going to be, so it's an oral. It's 25 VAR isn't much, so I wouldn't expect much damage from that. But then, like, cost to benefit, what would that be compared to, say, 300 mast? Damage-wise, you know what I mean? Cost-to-benefit-wise. Is it that much more detrimental to do 8 weeks of 300 mast going into the show? Because personally, I would opt for that. I know Skip, he loves VAR, and he loves it as that finishing touch compound, whereas Andrew and I both agreed, and Nate Spear was with us, we all agreed that Winnie has, just in our opinions, in our experiences, a much more like nasty, grainy, drier, harder look. So I'd personally go with Winnie over VAR in that scenario.
I've just had that conversation with somebody this morning, yeah, that when you look at the action of the drugs, Winnie offers far more for the last 4 weeks than VAR does.
Yeah, and that's what I've seen in my experience. But I wonder, what, you know, how bad off are we? Let's say his test replacement is high end. Let's say he's doing 200. What if for that last 8 weeks he bumped it to 300 and had in 300 mass? That, to me, that's still a pretty mild overall cycle. You know what I mean? 300 test, 300 mast for the last eight
Scott,
weeks into the show.
Are you encouraging this gentleman to take more?
No, don't say those. Don't say those words. Don't say those words, because YouTube would not like that idea.
Explicitly stated he doesn't want to use a lot.
Well, what I'm asking myself is, like, cost to benefit, how damaging is that? I don't see that as being like the end of the world. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see that as being taking big risks, you know?
No, and I think there's the thing is, there's a danger there as well. And we as users are particularly bad for this, in that we rationale risk to the point where we see no risk when in fact there always is. But I think there may also be an element in this particular case, and the gentleman can definitely message us back if I'm wrong here, that it may be a little bit of a case of, it's not just the risk element, he just wants to do it. Whether using 300 mast is safe or equivalent of a low dose of Anavar, from a health risk point of view, I don't think that so much is the issue. It's where he is mentally in that he wants to do what he perceives as being the lowest risk.
Yeah.
And naturally, most people, if you said 300 mega mast, 40 mega Anavar, which is the lowest risk, most people are going to say Anavar. Most people are going to go that route, as if you asked them to pick which was the lowest risk.
Yeah.
Whether that's correct or not is irrelevant. It's his personal perception of the risk he's taking.
Yeah.
So I think that may be an element to this as well, that it's not just the reality of the drug risk he actually poses to himself in what he chooses, but more the mental perception he has around what he's doing risk-wise.
Yeah. I guess kind of what I've seen lately in the last few years has been, it's almost an opposite effect. So you mentioned that, and I agree with you 100%, that we go into things and we make ourselves believe that there's zero risk. I almost feel like people feel like if you did a real cycle, you know, if you were to actually get big, then you're guaranteed to have health problems because of that. You know what I mean? Because I have worked with people that we've done things moderately. We've been conservative. We checked labs all the way through. They've never been actually big before. And when it actually starts happening and things start coming together, they get afraid. I've seen that happen. Mm-hmm. People nowadays, it's a perspective that didn't happen 20 years ago. They start going, whoa, I kind of want to back off from this. I do want to get as big as possible. But then they start associating poor health with actually reaching their goals. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think the other thing as well is as you start to get bigger, there is that period you go through where you carry your weight badly. And there's a period of adjustment to extra muscle mass, and there's a period of that settling. And I think that often freaks people out as, oh, shit, I'm super unfit now. I need to pull size down. Not, I need to do a bit more cardio and get fitter so I carry this weight better. They automatically go, I need to drop size. And that's not necessarily the case. Don't get me wrong. Yes, all things being equal, the bigger you are, the more strain on the body, the bigger risk you are creating. But you can offset that by making sure you're functional at these bigger sizes. And I think a lot of people panic before they get the opportunity to actually correct that and become functional.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of guys, and I've worked with guys, like you said, they get to a certain size and it's like, oh, I'm uncomfortable. I'm struggling a bit. And it's like, right, get your cardio done. Do this, do that, get functional. Oh, no, I'm just going to drop size. Well, I thought you wanted to be big. I thought you wanted to get to a size where you would be impressive.
Right.
And now you're panicking at the first hurdle of it's a bit uncomfortable. Yeah. And the reality is, if you're going to push 100, 150 pounds above your natural body weight, it ain't going to be comfy when you first go there. You know, it takes time for you adjust to that weight.
Yeah, agree.
And it takes work as well. It's one of the reasons, one of the big shifts we've seen in strongman is this increase in functionality at higher body weights.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have a lot of strongmen that aren't big static powerhouses. They're mobile, they're functional, they're running around at 200 kilos.
Right.
And they can jump and they can move and they're very functional. And that's where strongman's gone.
I think that's great.
And as a result, they're fitter and healthier for it.
Yeah. All right. That was a good question. Good topic. But yeah, you got to weigh it out for yourself, I guess, at the end of the day. How about this one? How do you prevent existing gyno from developing further? Once you have it, is it more likely to keep growing? Also, is sensitive nipple really a warning sign that it's further developing? Can it develop without this symptom? Thanks, guys. And he said, Happy Easter, because he commented this on Easter. Happy Easter, by the way, Dave. Did you guys do like an Easter egg hunt or anything? Did the bunny come?
I worked.
Did the bunny come to your house, though?
No.
The bunny didn't come?
No.
I'm going to have a talk with Mrs. Crossland then. Did Mrs. Crossland work too? You guys just...
Yeah.
You guys were there in the office? I work too, so don't.
Well, the problem we had was it was a bank holiday on the Friday and the Monday, so
yeah,
we had to spend Saturday running around collecting bloods from various clinics to get them to the lab because we had no other way of getting them to the lab.
Oh, no kidding. So you were kind of like the Easter Bunny, but you were collecting blood samples, basically.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. What was the question? I forgot.
I can't remember. Gyno. He said...
So generally what happens in the process of gyno is you get inflammation. That inflammation causes sensitivity. That's where you get the itchy feeling. If that inflammation isn't dealt with, then you start to develop the actual tissue. Once you have established gyno, yes, you are going to be predispositioned to get it worse. So you are going to be slightly more sensitive, and your risk of it increasing does increase. So you do have to be a little bit more guarded in regard to how you manage your estrogen and protect yourself from gyno. I don't believe... But I may be wrong, but I don't believe because of the inflammation that you will get progressive gyno without getting sensitivity. But I'm not, fucking hell, I've been proven wrong so many times. there's every possibility that there will be someone out there who's grown a pair of absolute full-blown double D tits. And
they just woke up one day and they're there.
Yeah, and never had any sensitivity whatsoever. So, but in general, it's inflammation and sensitivity first, then the establishment of tissue. I believe that once tissue is formed, you can get the inflammation and tissue growth simultaneously. Because you've already got an existing growth there, so that can increase without going through an inflammation stage first. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically where I'm at with it. I mean, the idea would be surgery, but that's not always successful. I've seen a few people have surgery, one more recently, and he's still got very large swellings post-surgery that don't seem right at all to me. But they are responding to certain medications. We added Caberin because we weren't getting anywhere with anti-estrogens at all.
Yeah,
which I found really strange. This has been really confusing to me. I really don't know what the hell's going on. So we his estrogen wasn't particularly high.
Yep.
He's supposed to have all the gland removed, but the swellings are significantly large. I mean, we're not talking, you know, we're talking big.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then no joy. Prolactin wasn't particularly out of range, wasn't really concerned about it. And so we put in Caber, and that seems to have had a really positive effect on his swellings, but his estrogen is in range. It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I'm really finding it an odd one. But
were you able to check other forms, other issues like estrone?
No, unfortunately, we're not. We're stuck with E2, which yes, there is that. But I mean, we've tried a combination of Adex and Nova, and yeah, it didn't seem to have any impact whatsoever. And bear in mind, his test levels are not pretty TRT.
Yeah, okay.
And so everything's sort of low. I mean, I was at one point convinced there was some sort of infection going on.
Mm.
But as soon as he took the Caber, the swelling dropped significantly.
I'll tell you what, I think that there are far more cases of gyno than people think. And when I say that, I mean some level, some tiny amount of growth that if you were to check every bodybuilder out there, even if you don't see it, there's been some level of development, even if it's very small, even if it's unnoticeable. And once you do have that, then you are going to be more sensitive in the future. But I still do think that I'm with you, that you're gonna feel symptoms before that continues to become a problem. I think that once you've got it, you're gonna be more sensitive. And then the key, and this is regular situations, I'm not talking about your specific case, Dave, but once you've got it, then you just need to be more careful moving forward to make sure you stay on top of it, make sure that you're vigilant, you know?
Yeah, it does require more sensitive management once you've had it, yes.
So I don't know who this is because it says Facebook user. It says gyno for natural guys as well. So I had pseudogynecomastia as a kid, all right? So I didn't even know what it was. In fact, it wasn't until I got into bodybuilding that I recognized, oh, wow, I had gyno as a kid. But I noticed, like, I just remembered, like, I'd put a shirt on and it would brush my nipple and it would hurt. And sometimes my nipple would get real sensitive. And the males on my dad's side of the family were like heavier chested too. So one of the reasons I actually got into bodybuilding was I was like, man, I don't like the shape of my chest. Cause I had like fat down on the lower part of my chest. And I was like, I want to get in shape. If I were to do a bunch of bench press, then that will make my pack look the way I want it to, you know? Lo and behold, it did help, but I just had a fatty deposit. Pseudogynecomastia, though, there's no gland. So I got fat development, but I didn't have any gland issues. I don't have any swollen glands. And that happened as a teenager from natural testosterone levels. So, yeah, you definitely can get it as a natural guy. There's no question about that. I ended up getting lipo when I was like close to 30, I got into bodybuilding and I saved up my money and I was like, you know what? I just want to get this sucked out of my chest because it really had changed the way I felt about myself. It wasn't expensive. But if you do have a gland, you need to get that cut out. And generally people want to go to a good plastic surgeon. If you go to your general surgeon, they're going to see that as a tumor. And this is going to be a tumor removal surgery. Like they're doing that to protect you, to protect your health. They're not doing it for aesthetics. And you can end up having issues with the look afterward. Versus a plastic surgeon is going to remove the tissue, but then they're also going to contour the pec. So you're not going to have like a crater where your nipple once was.
All I took from that was Scott used lipo to prep for comp.
I should go back, man. Just get it sucked out of the lower back, across the abs. I'll tell you what I did notice, Dave. When I'd get in shape after that, like a decade later, I didn't compete for like another like 7 years or so. But when I would compete, my chest would get in shape first. I would see striations in my pecs long before I had striations anywhere else. But it was worth it to me. You know what I mean? It was worth it to me because it really affected my well-being and stuff. And as a kid, nobody tells you about that stuff. You know what I mean? It's like nobody tells you about those things. In the 90s, they're just like, hey, just live with it. It's just part of being a kid. What else do we have here, Dave? Okay, so a guy who's doing TRT. He says, does it matter if your test is dosed at 250 or 350 or 400, assuming he's still using his actual dose?
No, I would say the only thing I'd be wary of is I'm always very wary of test doses when they start claiming to be around the 400 mark.
Yeah.
Because generally that higher level of concentration is going to hurt like fuck if you did a full mil. But as long as you lower your volume to accommodate for the higher concentration, then you're taking exactly the same dose. It makes a difference. But anecdotally, I'd be concerned that anything around the 400 mark is actually not dosed at what it should be. Yeah. And I would generally go for a lower dose test as a TRT product because you've got more chance of it being correct.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We had somebody in the live stream say, I had a buddy win light heavyweights and overall back in the day using 300 test in 30 VAR. He built his base years earlier on much more, but he looked damn great at the low doses that he prepped on. One thing I didn't add is it's all going to come down to body fat. If you get absolutely peeled, then you're going to look great on anything you take, you know? And it sounds like that was the case with this guy, the light heavy. Dave, when you do a flat barbell press, where does the bar fall on your chest? Above or below the nipple or right on it?
More or less on it. I would say, well, it depends on what part of the pack I'm wanting to focus on.
Really? You would change that?
If I want to do incline on a flat, say for argument's sake, let's say I've got a gym, you know, because obviously I'm in poor old England, that we have no kit and no electric and no running water, and we're still shit in a box down the bottom of the garden.
I thought that's the way it was over there, but I never wanted to offend you by talking about it. Okay, yeah, wow.
So, you know, the gyms I trained in only had one bench, and that was flat. So if you wanted to do upper incline, you had to just barbell to the neck.
You had to get a rock. You could get a rock and put it under the bench, Dave.
So you just bench press to the neck to get your upper pec. But I would generally aim for sort of mid-lower sort of nipple and lower third of the pec. That would be sort of where I'd hit my bar.
Yeah, I mean,
if you go lower than that, I think it's too powerlifting, tricep dominated. I also like to keep the elbows wide as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm like above the nipple, bottom third of the pec, somewhere in there.
But I think a lot of it as well is, I think this is where a lot of people go or don't spend enough time doing this, is to play with movements to discover where your sweet spot is.
Yeah.
So you get a moderate weight, something that you know is enough resistance to feel, but it's not overtaxing, and then you go, right, what if I come here? What if I come here? What if I track there? What if I put my elbow there? What if I go out an inch on my finger grip? And you play around until you find the spot that really hits it, and then there you are. You know, you just use your brain and your body's feedback to work out where you need to be.
Yeah. Part of the reason I bench the way I bench is because it doesn't hurt my shoulders. You know what I mean? It's like, that's a big factor right there. What doesn't hurt?
I mean, I used to be really weird with benching, and that ended up carrying over into all sets. All exercises, not all sets. When I would go heavy, like on my heaviest set, my first rep would be a half rep. And that was because of the torn pec. There was so much scar tissue in my left pec that as it came down, I could feel it pulling.
Oh, yeah.
So always a bit nervous. So the first rep was a half rep. Then I went back up. Then I'd come down and touch. And I wouldn't count that first rep, but it would be almost like my staging rep just so I got the feel, and then I'd go.
Yeah, like a feeler.
And I ended up I'd end up starting doing that in squats, where my first squat was a half rep. Then I went full depth on my second one, and I got that. That ended up creeping into a lot of exercises, but it was actually born off the injury to my pec.
Huh. I had something here. I had a big favor to ask you, Dave.
Okay, you want me to read something, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. So, guys, here was my thought. I feel like Dave could be really good if he could just, if he wanted to, he could stop doing eval, although you guys would still need your blood work done, so he needs to keep doing that. He just basically could retire, and he could start just, like, reading books on tape, or, you know, like, for Audible, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, there's a book and a movie that I've never seen or read called The Hobbit. Have you heard of this?
May have, yes.
You may have. I was wondering, would you do me a favor? Can you see this here? This is the first line. This is the first line from The Hobbit. Can you read this for me? Because I'm going to just sit back. I'm going to pretend like I'm just like relaxing. I've got a half hour off, and maybe I'm getting ready for bed. I'm going to listen to my book on tape as read by Dave Crosslin.
In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole, filled with the ends of worms and an oozy smell. No, yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort.
That was good. That was really good. What do you think? Are you sold?
I think you're being sarcastic.
No, that was really good. I mean, maybe we got to look a little more bass, a little more bassy to your voice. You know what I mean? Like, we could do another take, and I think we could even get it better. But just as a dry run, I'm fucking sold. All right? That's all I got to say.
Okay. Well, on that part, you owe me £100 for that reading.
Actually, we probably owe the people who have that book, I think. We're going to get demonetized now. We also had another comment. I could see Dave with a double-headed battle axe if he takes up the medieval dueling. That way he doesn't have to run around that much. Either way.
No, what I want is I want the axe where it's an axe blade on one side and it's a hammerhead on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got both sharp and blunt attacks depending on who I'm battering.
Okay, because you just spin it around, right?
Yeah.
Do you have your big hammer in there somewhere still? Do you keep?
No. Mick Millington, who owns Monster Gyms and Monster Clothing.
Yeah.
It is now in his possession.
Oh, no kidding. You gave it to him or he stole it from you?
Yeah. No, I gave it to him as a present because I knew he would appreciate it and care for it.
That's very nice of you, Dave.
He has like a horror museum.
Oh, really?
Mainly film memorabilia. So it's been added to that collection.
Guys, Dave was in a movie. It was a German film, was it?
Yes.
It was in a short German film. We should revisit your television commercials again. We haven't done that in a long time. And your appearances.
Yes, I was in the Man with the Hammer.
Yep.
That was the German film. And then I did something for Lemsip, which is still available on YouTube.
We did watch that one. And that's where you were like running around and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously there's my two films.
Yeah, of course. But you've done other stuff too. You were on,
The Pig Man of Roanoke.
The Pig Man of Roanoke. Although they didn't get a good look at Dave. You just saw this big imposing figure. And that was released in the US. I saw that. But
that was on Travel Channel.
There was like another commercial. It's not like Audible. It was something. I can't remember what you were doing in it.
There was the Readly ad where I had Readly. My head shaved.
Yeah. Readly. I wonder if we could find that one. That would be a good one. I should look for it, and we'll bring that up, guys. If you can think of anything else,
The best one was the Bounty advert. Plenty. The kitchen tissue, kitchen towel.
Oh yeah. I wonder if I could find that.
One sheet. That got banned. No, it got banned. I can't find it anywhere.
Oh, why did it get banned?
sexual innuendo.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yes, because Big Dave had a mucky helmet, and one sheep needed to polish my helmet with the kitchen towel.
Okay.
Honestly, that was the biggest laugh ever filming that.
Man.
Because we must have done 50 takes, because every time we did a take, someone cracked up laughing.
Yeah.
So the guy in the ad sheet is a Spanish guy called Juan Sheet, because it only takes one sheet of this kitchen towel to clean up a mess.
How do you... Hold on a second. Let me just go to YouTube while you tell this story. I'm going to look. How do you... Is it like J-U-A-N?
Yeah. And his accent sounds like it's a put-on Spanish accent. It's not. That's how he really talks.
Okay.
So they did a series of adverts, and one of them was how Tiny Dave has a mucky helmet.
Okay.
And he stood facing camera. I'm dressed as a biker, and I've got a biker helmet under my arm that's got basically a lump of birdshit on the front of it.
Okay.
And they wheel me in on this platform, and it was so clunky and amateurish. But it was supposed to look like that. It was supposed to look really stupid.
Yeah.
So they wheel me in, and the rope pulling the platform broke. So they then had to lay on the floor and try and push me in out of camera shot. And just everybody just crack up laughing constantly. And then he says, "This is my friend Tiny Dave, and Tiny Dave has a mucky helmet. And it only takes one sheet to polish Dave's helmet." And every time he delivered this line, somebody in the crew pissed themselves laughing.
Oh, man, we got to find that.
And we just have to keep, and then we couldn't do anything for laughing. And anyway, it got banned. And I cannot get a copy of it anywhere. I've tried.
Guys, if you can find that, the Wanchi ad with Dave as a bicyclist, right? That's what you're saying? Like that kind of biker?
Biker, leather jacket, big helmet, all that.
Okay. If you guys can find that, let us know. Send it to me, McNallyDiets@gmail.com, or send it to Dave. We got to get that on here. We've got a couple more questions. Has it been covered on, he said, D and stuff? Anadrol raises blood glucose.
Right. Now, this came up in, where did this come up? Might have been on the page.
That's where I got it from. Yeah.
Yes. So, looking at, there seems to be two almost opposing sets here. When you look at research around anabolics, generally they will lower BG and increase insulin sensitivity. That's
I thought it was the other way around.
Hang on. No. Okay. Just listen.
Okay.
However, with the case of Anadrol, in diabetics, it has the opposite effect. But there are studies that show an increase in because I actually put a study on the page that showed an increase in BG sensitivity.
Okay. Yeah, I've always heard the opposite. The anabolics will lower sensitivity. Interestingly, so I'll tell you what. If you're seeing research, there's that. I spoke to...
Well, have a look on the page. Have a look on the page.
I'll take a look at it. I spoke to a client who has type 1, a former client. I've worked with him in the past. And I asked him what his experience has been. And he said that he noticed the opposite effect. And he said that NPP was the biggest standout, that he found that he was getting a lowered blood sugar.
Yeah, that's what the research I was looking at stated.
Yeah, I've always heard and thought that anabolics would interfere with blood sugar. But I'm not saying I'm right.
You'd have to look at the...
I'll pull that up. And that'd be a good question to get Dr. Scott to weigh in on, too, I think. We did get asked that a while back, and we never dug into it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a quick look, and there was definitely data around worsening people with existing conditions. But there was a study showing a increase in insulin sensitivity with the use of anabolics.
Okay. Okay. I believe.
And I put that study on the page. So if you pull that up and hopefully now you've got me thinking, did I fucking make this up in my head?
No. I mean I take your word on it. Let's come back to it at some point. I can't pull it up at the minute.
Why not?
It's there. Because people don't want to see me just sit here and scroll, Dave.
Well, that's what you normally do.
All right. Does anyone use a mouth guard for sleep apnea? If so, what brand do you like? This is from Brandon over at the Facebook group for Think Big. He says, I'm not big enough to need a CPAP yet, but I was told recently that occasionally I stop breathing and gasp in my sleep, hoping a mouthpiece will help some. I think he needs to get a sleep study done.
Yeah, I've never had any experience. I went straight to a CPAP machine, so I've never had any experience to the mouth guard, so I don't know if they're any good.
Yeah, here's what I noticed is I thought that I'm much like him. I would occasionally wake up gasping, or I'd occasionally snore, but it was minimal. And then when I got tested, they were like, "Oh yeah, no, you woke up like 250 times in an hour, you know, like you don't know it because you immediately fall back asleep. So it's like you just come into consciousness and back out, and you're not even aware that it's happening if you have sleep apnea. If it's bad enough that you actually wake up gasping." Those are like the worst moments, the absolute worst moments. But generally, there's going to be other moments, you know, that you don't really register. So I would say a sleep study would be the route to go. And if he needs a CPAP, then that's more important than just for bodybuilding. You know, that's for your health as well, right?
I've got that study, by the way.
Okay. What do you got?
So it says oxymephalone ameliorates insulin sensitivity in maintenance hemodialysis patients. And it looks at it, and it basically says that patients, by increasing skeletal muscle function and stimulating myocyte glucose uptake and metabolism through the use of oxymephalone, HD patients treated with short-term oral oxymephalone showed an increase in insulin sensitivity when compared to the placebo group.
Okay. Yeah, the way I'd always understood it was that even if the pancreas is releasing insulin, that the anabolics will trigger the liver to continue releasing glucose.
Okay. I believe there's some action around the glucocorticoid receptor as well.
Okay.
SIBG, but I'm not sure exactly what that is. We can have a look at it if you want for next week.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
Remind me.
Dave should audition for the new Game of Thrones prequel.
What for? The fat bastard that sits in the corner?
Dave, you got to be nicer to yourself.
I am nice to myself. I'm just honest. That's all. I'm very nice to myself. I'm having a ginger coffee.
Is that what it is? It sounds terrible. Why not just drink regular coffee? What's a ginger coffee? Does it have like ginger in it? Or is it for redheads? Ha-ha! Yes, Dave. Guys, Dave's just looking at me now. And I feel kind of uncomfortable.
Oh, you shall be.
We've got one more. And we also have Uncle Dave's advice for the day. We need some wisdom.
Scott, do you have a neighborhood watch scheme where you live?
I don't know why.
Just wonder.
All right, one more. He says, question for the podcast and the audience. Oh, okay. Have you guys ever experienced the feeling of warmth, heat, while taking gear. I don't mean compounds like Clen, DNP, crazy stuff. I mean regular basic gear. In my case, I'm currently on 450 test, 400 EQ per week, and I feel as if it's summer, and it's actually not. Outside, it's about 15 to 17 degrees. But when I go out wearing a sweatshirt or jacket, I still feel like he'll go outside wearing a sweatshirt and jacket because he doesn't feel like he needs to wear a heavy coat, basically. He's hot all the time on cycle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 My wife used to turn the heating off in the house and just use me as a radiator.
You ever notice you can, if you close the door, like you can heat the bedroom up overnight. Like it gets like hot and musty. Especially Dave, 350 pound man. That would be like having like some sort of one of those anabolic myostatin negative cows, the big bulls all beefed up, you know.
She used to actually complain I made the bed too hot.
Yeah, I've heard that myself.
Yes, so yes, it does, my friend. Don't worry about it. It's an increase in your metabolic pathways, your metabolism of everything, an increase in energy turnover, which has a side effect of generating heat.
Yes. So, wisdom of the day, Dave.
Oh, I haven't really got any today.
You've got, but you're just, you're filled with wisdom, though.
I don't feel very wisdomy today.
You just Uncle Dave's advice, you know. This is you have one thing that you need to prepare each week, Dave. Other than that, you just show up and then you blame me if anything goes wrong.
You're lucky I showed up today.
Why?
I don't know. I've got a sore wrist. Leave me alone.
The people miss you, Dave, by the way. And we did get a lot of messages too. People saying like, hey, we hope that Dave is well and recovers from his procedure and stuff so like that. Messages
just like this. Just to put this into context.
A lot of these.
The procedure I'm having is actually, as a procedure, very, very simple. It only lasts 20 minutes. I'm in hospital for a total of 4 to 5 hours. That's it. The procedure's not particularly complex. Yes, there is a risk of infection post that needs to be monitored. But other than that, the problem element is whether this bastard machine starts firing or not. Because if that does, then it starts to impact me quite significantly. And we won't know how the machine is going to read me until it's in me.
You don't want it to fire, right?
No. If it fires at stage one, I'm not allowed to drive for a month. If it fires at stage two, I'm not allowed to drive for 6 months.
Let me ask you a question. Real talk here.
That is it.
Okay. Will you actually not drive for 6 months? Is that actually going to happen?
I would find it very difficult.
Yeah.
Though I must admit, boss lady would probably be very strict on trying to enforce it.
Yeah. She'd have to hide your keys.
I would find it very difficult, yes. There's no denying that. I don't for one second pretend that. But so the problem is potentially just getting a thing tuned into me, which can take a bit of time. Yeah. So above that, it's not something I need now. It's something they want in now, so it's ready for when I do need it in 10 years' time. So that's a – please, guys, though I appreciate the concerns, I genuinely do, and thank you for them. Don't stress. It's nothing major, honestly. It is not a big deal.
As long as the thing doesn't start firing afterward.
Well, that just makes it really inconvenient for me if it starts firing. Because if it starts firing stage two, that fucker hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we try it just like once? Is there an external button that I can press sometimes? Just to, like keeping your toes?
You can fuck about with it if you put a magnet near it. So I'll get a magnet and we can play around. See what happens.
Get a good couple strong magnets and see what we can do.
And the other inconvenience is that this is as high as I can take my arm. Well, so I'll do it on this arm, but it's my left arm. This is as high as I can take my arm for 8 weeks.
Jesus. Can you still do your cardio?
Yeah, but it sits in a pocket they create in my left pec. So, and the wire goes from the machine down into my heart. So if I lift my arm, it lifts the pec and then pulls the wire. The wire will get moved out of position because it needs to seat and root and obviously flesh heal around it. Scar tissue hold it in place. So,
So you're going to basically be a cyborg.
I'm aiming on it. I've always wanted to be a cyborg.
Yeah. I think this is brand of something.
Yeah. And I would happily lose this wrist at the moment. It is giving me some shit today.
Really?
Anyway, Dave's advice. Let me think.
And you can't say keep swimming.
Why? It's my default one. Keep swimming.
You can't say it. You said it so many times. I didn't even know about that movie until you told us. And then you didn't know this because you never watch our show. When you actually did that one, I got that video and I cut out the part where that little fish says that and I added it into the show.
It's the best advice ever given on any film in the history of mankind, isn't it?
Keep swimming. It really is good advice.
It's simple, but it's true. So there you go. I don't know if I've done this. I may have done this in passing. I'm old. I'm losing my memory. I think I'm going senile, so I forget shit very regularly.
Blame it on the Decker.
Yes, blame it on the Decker. Definitely. What's Decker? Who used Decker? Who? What?
Dave used to be a bodybuilder. What? Yeah, he did movies.
Did I? Really? Yeah. Oh, that's why my dick's so small. Everything in life has a cost, has a price. It's always worth taking the time to make sure you understand the cost.
Yeah, that's good.
Everything we do, there's no free anything. There is a price somewhere along the line. You may not immediately or directly pay it, but there'll come a day where it's due to be paid in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with that 100%.
So when you're looking at things and you're trying to make decisions, and this is about anything, the old adage of if a deal is too good, it probably is true. Everything has a price.
Yeah, I go with that.
And where we usually come unstuck is where we agree to purchase whatever. And I don't mean purchase with money. I mean purchases in time, investment, effort, whatever we do.
Yeah.
Without fully realizing what it's going to cost us long term.
Yeah, I'd go with that, man. There's no question. Sometimes it is financial. Sometimes it's otherwise.
Mm-hmm. No. Sometimes, like you say, so it's otherwise. And I find... The only other thing I would also say, and it's a very old saying, is don't put off for tomorrow what you can do for today. Very old saying, but very true. If you have the time and you have things to do, do them.
Yeah.
Because the sooner you clear your sheet, if the shit does happen to hit the fan the next day, you're not still trying to deal with the crap you should have dealt with the day before.
Yeah.
So there are my two things. Yeah.
You have a lot of work left today?
Probably about 10 reports, so it's not too bad. 2 submission reports, review and finalize a police report, send out. And I think that's... Order some Kenalog.
Some
order
what?
Some water. Kenalog.
What's Kenalog?
It's a hay fever drug.
Oh, okay.
So you do one shot, and then it stops you getting hay fever all year.
Oh, no kidding. Is that for you or for a client, customer?
For me, but it also works well with arthritis as well.
Oh, no kidding. That's good to know.
So, yeah, just little bits and bats, really. A few client bits and bats and stuff like that. So it'll probably another 4 hours.
All right.
Probably take me to about 7:30.
Yeah, I'm just getting my day started. So after we get done, I'm going to do my my check-ins and edit the shows, keep things rolling. We got to get you on. It's just bodybuilding one day soon.
Am I allowed?
Yeah, we wanted you there for a long time.
I didn't think I would come up to standard to be on such a prestigious show.
Yeah, we've wanted you ever since the start, Dave. Since episode one.
So, you see, when it comes to Think Big Bodybuilding Media, people, you have Scott Stevenson is like the penthouse. He's the top floor. He's the posh stuff. Okay.
He's smart. He's a smart guy. Yeah.
Then you've got the bodybuilding nerds and the other one.
Well, bodybuilding nerds doesn't happen anymore. That show's over.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't even know the names of the shows, but you've got the other one with Ron and Dusty and everything. And that's like your mid-range, good value for money, high-quality product. And then this show is like the basement, where it's all stuff from two seasons ago that nobody wants. you can buy a full wardrobe for a pound. You know, this is where we sit. This is bargain basement. Everything piled. It's like when they're still selling cassette tapes at a service station, and they're like 25 pence for 30. You know, because nobody has it anymore.
That's this show.
Yeah, that's this show.
Well, it makes for a good crossover. We got a funny comment, actually. I think I was trying to say it, and it didn't come out, but somebody said it for me. Remember that picture of you and Ron and Dusty and Christmas Cabbage together? This one here? Mm-hmm. Somebody said, Dave looks like a kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
I do look very special needs, I have to admit. Yeah. I can't even argue with that.
Well, that's why we love you, Dave. You have a good sense of humor. You can make fun of yourself.
That is definitely a full-blown short bus window-licking fucker there.
Well, we got to get you on that show. So the guys are going to Cologne. I'm not going with him this year. I was not invited. But then again, though, I don't feel like I really connected to a lot of people at Cologne. The German audience and the England, or excuse me, the German and the European audience, they were different than the UK people. And they're like a little bit more standoffish versus UK people were like, oh, hey, Scott, what's going on, man? I love the shows. In the US, they're like that, but even more. You go to Europe and they're like, oh, hello. Yeah, what's in that product there? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, have a nice day. By the way, I like your podcast. And they're like, they say it like as they're walking away. I'm like, why don't you just lead with that? I didn't even know you knew who I was, you know?
Well, yeah.
More reserved.
I've never been to FIBO. I sort of want to go.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I'm not sure if I can cope with that much bodybuilding.
It's only one room of bodybuilding.
Right.
The rest of it is like, dude, we would have so much fun if we just went there to just go and walk around. In fact, it would be like a solid fun day. I wouldn't want to go back for the second, third, or fourth day. But if we just went there for one day, we could go to the bodybuilding expo, and then there's basically like, you know, the Arnold is this in the US, it's huge, right? And that's just one building, one room. The FIBO is like multiple rooms just like
that, but
they're all different. So like we could go to the gym equipment one and go look at all the machines, go get some lunch, and then go to the other gym equipment one.
But that's what I mean. It's all sort of bodybuilding-ish, and I don't know if I can cope with that much bodybuilding.
Yeah.
It's sort of. I'm going to Aberdeen this week anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we drive up Friday, seminar Saturday, and then they've got the show on Sunday, and we're doing a stand at the show on Sunday as well. It's only a low key for us point of view. We're not putting anything up or anything.
Okay. Are you guys doing labs there?
Yeah, yeah. We're doing bloods there. And then the weekend after, we're in Glasgow for the PCA Scotland.
Oh, okay. And when you guys set up something like that, will you do like bloodletting right there on the spot too?
Yeah.
That's great.
We generally, for an event like that, what we'll do is we'll take a few banners and we'll just screen off round a chair so it's semi-private.
Yeah.
We don't bother with tents or that side of things. It's too much hassle for the venue, and it's too much hassle for us, to be quite fair, because it means taking a van where we can just take the car. Oh, yeah. We've ordered our new stand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, custom-built new stand.
What do you mean? Like, what's a new stand going to be?
Like, I can't tell you. It's a surprise.
But it's like the background and stuff, like the booth, you mean?
So yeah, what we're doing, we're sticking with our love of inflatables.
Okay.
But what we've decided is, so the big tent, the two titty tent, is just too big and it's too impractical. So we're getting rid of that completely. We're going to sell that. We're keeping Big Red because it's still a good tent and well known and recognised. We have a white box that's 4 meters by 4 meters that we use for smaller events to create a clinical room.
Okay, yeah.
And then we get in a new stand. but we're getting stand elements as well, so it becomes modular.
Stand elements.
Yeah, so I know that sounds a bit weird. So what we're going to have is we're going to have a main stand part, which is going to be like 6x4.
Yeah.
And meters. 3.5 meters high. Yeah, yeah. And 3.5 meters high.
Oh.
But then we're going to have, now that will work for the Arnolds, because we can't afford to go any bigger than that at the Arnolds. But then for like Fitex, where we get more space.
Yeah.
We've got other elements that we will then fit in that extra space that becomes sort of modular. And then if we're doing a small show, we can take one of these modular elements and put it at that show as a part of marketing piece. And there's all sorts of mad stuff we're doing, but it's all a bit fun. It's all a bit of a laugh stuff. It's not serious stuff.
Okay. Well, I like the sound of this.
So all being well, because Fitex Manchester is in 5 weeks, so all being well, they're trying to have everything ready for Fitex Manchester.
Okay, that's fantastic, man. Well, I hope that it works out in time. And, yeah, guys, go to evalbloodanalysis.com. You can get your lab work done by Dave or show up at one of these events if you're in the UK. You can just, literally, you don't even have to make an appointment, right? You just walk in and be like, hey, Dave, I need to get my labs checked, right?
At the events, yeah, we don't do any booking system at the events. Yeah. You just turn up.
And there you go. Plus, like, vitamin IVs. You guys do that kind of stuff there, too?
We do, yes. We do. Okay. Yeah, you only need to book if you're going to a clinic. But if you're going to one of the events, like the gym events or the expo events, it's all just walking.
You go to truenutrition.com. Use our code THINK over there for everything you need. High-quality protein powders, carb powders, and basically at wholesale prices. Use our code THINK to get additional savings. Strom Sports Nutrition. You're going to need to shop at Strom to help out Rich because Rick had the pec tear. Mm-hmm. Which I don't want to put the picture up. He showed me the pec tear. It's all down his arm is purple now. But he's going to need to pay for that surgery somehow. So buy some Strom products to help Rick out, right?
Yeah, and he's not that good at sex, so he can't work it off.
And supplementsource.ca for our Canadians. Guys, comment below with questions for the next show and for another episode of the D and Stuff podcast. Guys, we'll see you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.